Okay, so this week's speaker is Kirill Krasnov, who has written a number of interesting papers just recently on this topic. So take it away, Kirill.
Okay, great. So first of all, what I'm talking about today is joined with my PhD student, Niren, should be in the audience. And well, as this audience knows very well, as soon as standard model appeared, there were attempts to connect standard model fermions to actonians. And well, the first paper is Gennadin and Gussi from 73. There has been a lot of work over the years on this idea, and most often this is done in setting of k-fold algebras or division algebras. And well, as we all know, there is clearly some structure that is suggestive of actonians. And this is why people keep writing papers on this. But it's very difficult, well, at least for me, this is my personal experience, it's very difficult to distill a clean statement, or at least a statement that I would consider to be clean. And everything is in the subtleties. So it's very important to get just the right number of states from the model and nothing else. And so everything is in the subtleties. And the purpose of this talk is to explain one clean statement, or at least a statement that I consider to be clean, and that the statement that I understand. So let me try. The logic of the statement is very simple. We know that all fermions of one standard model generation, which I listed here, they fit into a single vial spinner representation of spin 10. So first of all, maybe I should explain the way I think about this. I think in terms of two component spinners, two component Lorentz spinners. And so all these 16 states that appear here, which include a right-handed neutrino, these 16 states for me are two component Lorentz spinners of the same chirality. I don't know how standard this naming convention is for people with different backgrounds, but just to explain it a little bit more, if you think about four component Dirac spinner, then of course Dirac spinner contains two component spinners. One of them is, let's say, unprimed, the other is primed. And so of course we need two component spinners to describe a particle together with its antiparticle. So one can always decide to describe this prime spinner as a complex conjugate of some unprimed. And this is what is done here. It's very convenient to just keep Lorentz spin away from the picture just by saying that what you list are two component spinners of the same chirality. Okay. So there are these 16 states. They all fit into a single vial representation of spin 10. The other part of the statement, and I will be explaining this in some detail today, spin 10 turns out to have an actonionic description. Well, this description is given here. What I described is Lie algebra spin 10. As you can see, it can be described as as algebra of 2x2 complex matrices, which acts on two component columns with complexified actonionic entries. And so this just some naming conventions here. A is in SO, Lie algebra of spin 8. Spin 8, of course, has two different types of vial representations. So when it acts on one type, you call it A. This A prime is a matrix corresponding to the same Lie algebra element, but acting on the spinner or spin 8 of other chirality. And this LX and LY are operators of left multiplication by an actonian. So the parameters in this description are, you have spin 8 sitting here. There is a real parameter A, and there are two actonians. And well, the number of parameter matches. And the claim is that this is a description of Lie algebra of spin 10. And So as I said, I'll explain where it comes from, but I, kind of the main point is that there is absolutely no mystery that the algebra that spin 10 has this octonionic description. You can derive it in several different ways, but this is not a mysterious statement. This is a statement that everyone would agree about. And it's not just the spin 10 that has octonionic description. I will explain one possible method to arrive at such a statement, and you will see that many, many different Lie algebras or Lie groups have an octonionic description, and there will be an explanation why. So this is the second statement that I need, and then I'll combine the two. So we see that particles sit inside this Weyl spinner of spin 10, but Weyl spinner of spin 10 is two complexified octonions. And then, well, it tells you that, of course, you can, therefore, you will be able to identify fermions of one standard model generation with components of these two complexified octonions. There is no mystery about that. And I'll explain explicit dictionary as we go on. And, well, so these observations remove the mystery, at least for me, why octonions were observed to be relevant. It's just a statement from representation theory. But of course, some mystery still remains, but this is the mystery of why fermions fit into Weyl spinner spin 10. But we got used to it already. Well, it's how nature works, so we can't really, well, we can ask why, but only to some extent. The nature selected, the nature told us that this is the way it works, and then octonions appear because of this octonionic model of spin 10. Well, so let's try to develop all this in the details. Plan for the rest of the talk. I'll explain the construction that leads to this octonion description of spin 10. And I want to convince you that it can be derived rather than, of course, you can write it down. With hindsight, you can just write it down if you know how things work, but you can also derive it. And I'll explain how this particular model was derived. And octonions will appear as a convenient language. It will be a storing device, because spin 10 is a very large group, and even in this spinner representation of spin 10 that I'm describing, two complexified octonions, it's a very big space. And so if you describe it without the octonions, you will end up with very large matrices. So octonions compactify the description. They make it much more economic. And this is their main role in the story. And then I'll explain explicit dictionary, complexified octonions to elementary particles, and I will end up with some observations related to how GSM sits inside spin 10. So some physics will come, well, physics, quasi-physics will appear here in this last part. But for the main part of the talk, I'll just do representation theory. Okay, so let me explain. I want to explain some construction of spinner representations, so for general spin group. And this construction is sort of in the literature, but not quite. I'll explain to what extent it's new. Well, but it's also, it's a mixture of two constructions that are in literature. So in that sense, it's not new. But let's talk about how textbooks construct spinners. Well, the usual way is that works for any Lie group or Lie algebra is with weights. You act on highest weight state with roots. You go down, you build a representation space. This is universal, but for very large representations, the ones that we're interested in here, the complexity gets out of hand very quickly. So it's not a convenient method. It of course, it works, but it's like, it's definitely not the best working method. Another textbook way is gamma matrices. Generating a Clifford algebra in some higher dimension are always tensor products of lower dimensional gamma matrices. This is already much more efficient, and one can classify Clifford algebra this way. That's another textbook way. However, for actual computations, at least I found that thinking about tensor products is complicated. At least my brain refuses to process tensor products. So The method that I'm explaining is related to this tensor product method, but it, at least for me, it's much more efficient for practical computations. And I'm after analogs of statements that you're all familiar with. So spin 1-3 is SL to C, spin 1-5 is SL to H. There are lots of statements like that in the literature. How do you derive them? And how, at some point, statements in the literature stop. Nobody bothered to work out the higher dimensional spin groups. But imagine you need a group like that. So how would you go about it? And so here, the method that I'll explain is very handy. So I can construct, I'll identify spinners or spinners with polyforms. And as I said, this is a combination of two methods, both in the literature. One method is for spin to n in the compact case. And this method relies on the choice of a complex structure in R to n. And it's very well known in the literature that this is related to pure spinners. Pure spinners are in one-to-one correspondence with choices of complex structure in R to n. So you select a complex structure in R to n, you identify it with Cn. And of course, the metric in R to n is a Hermitian, so restricted on Cn, it vanishes. So it's very important that the metric restricted on Cn is null. And then while spinners are identified with even and odd polyforms in Cn. So for example, in the case of C2, which is relevant, know that there is some halving of dimension. So if I want to describe R to n, I'm using Cn. So for example, for spin 4, you'll be using C2. And then, well, this is a general even polyform on C2. It's a combination polyform. The name is, it's a differential form, but it's a linear combination of differential forms of all possible degrees. So this is why it's natural to call it a polyform. So this is a zero form plus two form. And you're only selecting even because the claim is that while spinners, the irreducible representations are even or odd polyforms. Okay, so this is an example explaining what's happening. And then how do you construct your spinners? Well, you introduce annihilation operators, which is you add an elementary one form. This is your creation operator, or you remove it. This is annihilation operator. There is n of them, n pairs. They satisfy the canonical anti-commutational relations. And then you define your gamma matrices or gamma operators acting on polyforms as it's either the sum of creation plus annihilation or the difference, but then with an I. And you need this I in order for this operator to square to plus one. So all my gamma matrices will square to plus one. The fact that you're using I here means that you must work with complex coefficients. Polyforms, the coefficients in front of polyforms must be complex. So you generate Clifford 2n in this way. And this is a very explicit description because you both have the spinners, you have gamma matrices, so any computation is possible. This is, I find this very convenient technology. Now, for spin nn, it's a very similar construction. Again, this is in the literature. It relies on the choice of something like a complex structure. It squares to plus one, and it's compatible with the metric, but with a minus sign. So the point of this is that eigenspaces of this structure are null, and your RNN splits into two copies of RN, on both of which the metric is null. And then you, again, introduce creation annihilation operators. The sum gives you half your gamma matrices. The other half is the difference. Now these guys square to minus one, and so you generate Clifford NN. And they're all real. You don't need any complex coefficients in this case. So spinners of spin NN are real. Okay, so let me give the general prescription. This is what I said is a combination of the two. Well, it's obvious what to do. So if you have spin something, you split it as it's 2n plus rr. And then you use n coordinates to be complex and r real coordinates. And then your Clifford algebra is generated by 2n gamma matrices, which are this combination involving the I, they all square to plus one. And you have two R gamma matrices. The first R of them square to plus one, the last r squared to minus one. So you generate p from 2n plus rr. Let's see how this method works for spin 3-1, just to give you flavor that it's really convenient and it's not hard to work with it at all. So you need for spin 3-1, for the Lorentz group, you need one complex, one real coordinate. These are the polyforms. These are even, these are odd. Because we are in C times R, we have two coordinates, so the dimension of the space of even polyforms is two. You have alpha and beta, and both need to be complex because you're going to act, some gamma matrices contain an I in them. So the coefficients must be complex. And so we have C2 here, another copy of C2 here. These are our spinners. Then you compute how gamma matrices or gamma operators act on the polyforms. This is a very simple computation. You don't need to follow it. It's just what it's done here. Then you compute gamma matrices on odd polyforms. Again, this is the result. And then you find that, of course, it has a, you can give it a matrix description. Gamma matrices will map even to odd, and you agree that your even polyform is a two-component column alpha beta, odd polyform is gamma delta, and then your gamma matrices become 4x4 matrices off diagonal with complex entries. And here what they are. Of course, these are the familiar Pauli matrices, and the gamma zero is related to the identity. So this is a standard story, the one that we always learn when we learn about spinners of Lorentz group, but you see how to reproduce it via this technology. Now let me describe another important aspect of the technology, which is reality conditions. Of course, it's very important to have the notion of Majorana spinners. So what are these in the language of these polyforms? You can define, well, actually here there are no polyforms. This is true in any description. You can define two operators. Let me call them RA, RB. They're complex antilinear. They involve complex conjugation. And one of them is given, you take a product of all real gamma matrices. Well, here, of course, I'm implying the description I gave. Real gamma matrices are the ones, remember, for spin RS, some gamma matrices or gamma operators didn't have an I in them. And so I call them real gamma matrices. And imaginary gamma matrices are the ones with explicit factor of I in them. So you take either this product or this product with complex conjugation both, and then you check that both of them either commute or anti-commute with all gamma matrices. And therefore they will commute with all Lie algebra elements. So this is good. And then you check that both of them square to plus minus one, and which squares to plus, which to minus depends on the signature. Then if there exists an antilinear map on your spinners that squares to plus one and that commutes or anti-commutes with all gammas so that it commutes with all commutators, we can impose this as a reality condition. We can, it's meaningful to require that this map applied to a spinner is a spinner itself, because this condition will commute with all Lie algebra transformations. For example, for spin 3-1, one finds that product of all real gammas. Remember, there are four gamma matrices. Three of them are real, one is imaginary. You find that the product of all reals is good. It squares to plus one. And so then the condition is meaningful, and then you find that when you act, of course, because it's a product of three gamma matrices, this reality condition will map polyform or spinners of one type into spinners of the other type. And then you find that, the Majorana condition is a Dirac, or the Majorana spinner in 3 plus 1 is a Dirac spinner, which is this type, which is again familiar. Now, quickly, how do you do computations? For computations, you also need inner product in the space of spinners. So how to describe that with polyforms? Well, you take the inner product, the spin RS invariant inner product is you just take one polyform, you reverse the ordering of all elementary one forms in it, you wedge it with another polyform, you restrict to the top form. This can be checked to be spinaris invariant in a product. So again, it's very explicit. For example, here I describe what happens for the lower group. I take two viral spinors of the same chirality. I wedge them, I select the top four, and I can do the same with spinors of the other chirality. And you see, you reproduce the familiar anti-symmetric bilinear forms. Okay, now let me explain. So let's go higher in dimension. This method is explicit, but the spinners you will produce for large orthogonal groups are very large in dimension. The complexity of the method grows very quickly, as of course with any other method. But then one can use the fact that for spin four, its viral spinors can be identified with quaternions, and Majorana viral spinors of spin eight can be identified with octonions. What it means is that, well, some of the polyform for a general pseudo orthogonal group it's a product of differential, for elementary differential forms. One can always, so basically this knowledge that viral spinners of spin four, spin eight can be identified with something else is helpful because you can recycle it in higher dimensions. It's like, well, for example, in the case of spin four, we saw that its spinners are polyforms in C2. This tells you that whenever you see these polyforms in C2, you will be able to identify them with quaternions. And similarly, polyforms in C4, you can identify with octonions. Okay, so let's see how this works. But just to finish on this general statement, this means that spin 4 plus RR will have a quaternion description, and spin 8 plus RR will have a quaternion description. And these two remaining cases remain complex. Again, this is all very explicit in terms of polyforms. Here, there are some notations are slightly cumbersome, so don't try to read these formulas. I'll explain in words what they mean. But the key point is that you want to identify. So the first step is to understand why Majorana viral spinors of spin 8 are octonions. And by understand, I mean also find explicit relation to polyforms, because then I will be able to use this polyform description of octonions later. And so, well, what you do, you take, first of all, you construct Majorana viral spinors of spin 8, which is, you select the Majorana condition. In this case, it's the product of four imaginary gammas with complex conjugation, scores to plus one. Then you impose this reality condition on the polyforms. Here is the result of this imposition. What happened is that general polyform in C4 is eight dimensional. But you have, because you impose the reality condition, you have the dimension, so you became copy of C4. And then, of course, these C4s will be identified with octonions. The way they identified with octonions is via triality map. We know that in any dimension, vector acting on a spinner gives spinner of an opposite chirality. And for spin 8, all these three spaces are copies of R8. This means that we can identify all of them with octonions in such a way that this Clifford multiplication becomes octonionic multiplication. And then there is a little exercise. You just take those real polyforms. You work out what this triality means in this case explicitly, because you know what gamma matrices are, you know what spinors are, you know that this is the statement of triality, and you know that things should be identifiable with octonions. So you work it out and you find how things are identified. And well, you get and actonic model for spin 8. So this model can be just written down. It's sort of intuitively clear that this is a correct model, but you can also, as I explained, you can derive it as well with the polyforms. So the model for spin 8, the Actonian model for spin 8, the spinners are, vial spinners are Actonians, and gamma matrices are, they take values in endomorphism of two component Actonian column, and here they are. So LX is left multiplication by an Actonian X. X bar is Actonian conjugation. If you square this matrix, its square is a multiple of the identity matrix. And this is why these matrices generate the Clifford algebra in eight dimensions. Maybe it's worth remarking that Actonians are not associative, but this operator of left multiplication by an Actonian is an associative operator simply because you put brackets correctly. This left multiplication just means that you put it's a nested sequence of brackets, so they are associative operators. So this is a model for Clifford algebra of spin in eight dimensions. Now, and together with what I said about general construction of spinners, this implies that spin A plus RR will have an Actonian description simply because the polyforms in this general number of, well, for this group will be polyforms in C4 and polyforms in CR. And those factors which are polyforms in C4, one can identify with Actonians. And so you know that this will have an Actonian description. And we'll work out some cases of this in the next slides. And it must be clear that Actonians here is a very useful storing device. It stores information. Single eight-dimensional object is like a byte rather than a bit. It compactifies the formulas, compactifies the description, makes it much more efficient. And this is why it must be used whenever possible. And so we see that groups like spin A plus RR have an Actonian description, but many, many other groups, or groups that can be related to this one, or can be thought of as subgroups of these ones, of course, they also have an Actonian description. And well, maybe I shouldn't go there. But so let's work it out for spin 9-1. The purpose of this exercise is to just describe spin 9. But you see, it's always more convenient for me to go to remain in this spin 8 plus RR case, because then the extra coordinates that I'm adding in my polyform description are real and things are cleaner this way. So this indefinite signature that I'm writing here is just, it's a scaffolding. It's a scaffolding of some construction. It can later be removed once you use it. So let's describe spin 9-1. Spin 9-1, we know that we will need four complex coordinates, one real, and then even polyforms will be even in C4, odd in C4 and dx. And similarly, odd in C4 times R is odd in C4 plus even in C4 times dx. And we know that it's possible to identify even an odd polyforms in C4 with Actonians, but we're going to do it. And it should be kept in mind that even an odd polyforms in C4 are spinners of spin 8 of opposite chirality. So it's important to distinguish these copies of Actonians. With this in mind, we write even polyform in C4 times R as Q plus P dx. Or we write it as a two-component column, PQ, and similarly for the odd polyform. Then we work out gamma matrices. They are in endomorphism of because they map even polyforms to all polyforms, and both of them, both wild spinners, spin 9-1, are two copies of diatonians. Gamma matrices are endomorphisms of four copies of diatonians. But if we only need Lie algebra, then it's enough to work with endomorphisms of Q2, because gamma-gamma commutators are Bloch diagonal, so it's enough to consider only one block. You work it out. This is explicit description. So these are 2x2 matrices acting on two component actonionic columns. A again is spin 8, R is real, and X and Y are actonions. And then if you want spin 9, you simply, you know which gamma matrix corresponded to the negative definite direction in 9-1. So you simply remove those translations that mix with that direction, and then you get description of Lie algebra of spin 9. Again, its spinners are two component actonionic columns. Let's go for spin 10 now, which is the interesting one for us for this talk. Again, I'll use this indefinite signature 10-2. But you shouldn't be thinking that something is two times here. It's just a construction. But I'm after spin 10. I'm not really interested in this 10-2 case. Of course, maybe it should also be said that spin 10-2 and spin 10 are closely related. Some of representations theories of spin 10 is governed by spin 10-2. So some computations in spin 10 case are easier done and understood in spin 10-2. But this is a remark. So in this case, in 10-2 case, we need two real coordinates. So even polyform will be, there will be two odd polyforms, both actonians, and two even polyforms, both actonians. Gamma matrices are 8x8 matrices acting on this 8 component actonionic column. But again, if we just need Lie algebra, it's enough to consider endomorphisms of Q4. You work it out. This is explicit matrix description of Lie algebra of spin 10-2. Again, notations are similar. A, B, C, D, T, S are all real numbers. A prime are in spin 8, and you have four octonions now. Now, we want spin 10. So easiest or the most appropriate way to get a spin 10 is to split it. So you split those two negative definite directions, and the rest is your spin 10. To do it, the best way is to write some complex structure. It's very well known that the product of two gammas, both of which square to either plus or minus one, gives you a complex structure. And because it's product of two gammas, it preserves the space of wild spinners. So we just write the product of two gammas which correspond to negative directions. It's a complex structure on spinners. And then we find what commutes with it in spin 10-2. Well, what commutes with it is spin 10 times spin 2, plus spin 2 at the Lie algebra level. And you work it out explicitly. This is a 4x4 matrix that is spin 10 commuting with this complex structure. But then because it commutes with complex structure, there is also a complex description. So you restrict your attention to the 1-0 subspace, this eigenspace of the complex structure. This is a subspace of complex linear combinations P1 plus IP2, Q1 plus IQ2. And then you work out what is your spin 10 transformation in that space. Well, it's the one that I gave on one of the first slides. These are 2x2 matrices. With factors of I in them. So they act on two component columns with complexified actonians. They act on these guys. Okay, so this is our model, actonionic model of spin 10, and it's a spinner representation of spin 10 Lie algebra. The columns that these matrices act on are copies of O2C on C16. So this is the familiar, this spinner representation. Now, let's relate it to elementary particles. We know that it should be possible. And let's provide explicit dictionary. So some fun begins here. The most straightforward way to identify things is, of course, via Patti Salam. In Patti Salam description, you think about leptons as the force column of quarks. So you get a copy of SU4 there, and you think about right-handed particles on which left-handed SU2 doesn't act. You think that there is another, or you introduce another copy of SU2, you call it SU2 right, that mixes the right-handed particles. And then you find that one generation of the standard model, left-handed, Lorentz left-handed particles all fit into the 16 complex dimensional wire representation of spin 10. And when restricted to this Patti Salam group, they split like that. So you get this SU2 left mixing up and downs. This is the familiar SU2, this is the weak SU2. SU4 relates leptons with three colors of quarks. And then there is another SU2, which mixes the right-handed particles together. And SU4 again mixes them up, but it's now an anti-fundamental representation of SU4. And it should be always kept in mind that they're all Lorentz spin-offs of the same chirality. Okay, now the best way to select SO4, SO6 subgroup of SO10 is by choosing a complex structure. Of course, there are many different SO4, SO6 subgroups, even the commuting ones. You can embed them into SO10 in different ways. But choosing a complex structure gives you such an embedding. And there are two ways to describe this complex structure. One is, well, they're both exactly the same, but so for example, you can take six gamma matrices, take their product. The product of six gamma matrices will square to -1. It will be complex structure on wild spinners because it will preserve the space of wild spinners being a product of even number. And then this is the complex structure. This is one way. What will commute with it is SO4 plus SO6 because one took six gamma matrices. But one can also work out that it's the same as choosing a unit image. Well, of course, if you take it should be said that if you take this six gamma matrices to be corresponding to six actonians, remember that there are eight actonians here and two other directions that were added to go from actonians to spin 10. So if you select the six gamma matrices to be in the actonians, and moreover to be in the imaginary actonians, then their product is related to a choice of a unit imaginary actonian. And so another equivalent description is you choose a unit imaginary actonian. Of course, there are S6 of such different choices. And then you define your complex structure on two component actonionic columns to be left multiplication by U and another left multiplication by U. Of course, there are choices that are made here. You could start using right multiplication, you could put signs there. But it is this choice that leads to this SO4 cross SO6 speed or spin 10. So it's the relevant one for one if we want to see the Patti Salam. Of course, multiplication by unit imaginary actonian on O is a complex structure on O. So it identifies actonians with copy of C4. Okay, and then because our spinners are copies of actonians, two copies of actonians complexified, we extend them by linearity. Maybe you don't see this formula, but it's you just act with LU, you act first on, this LU doesn't, it's a different complex structure. It's not all related to this factor of I. So LU just acts on both real and imaginary part of this complexified actonian. And then, well, you expect or you constructed this complex structure so that what commutes with it in spin 10 is spin 6 cross spin 4, and then you go check that everything is correct, that it's the one. So let's sketch this computation, because it helps to understand what's going on. So you compute the commutator of JU with that Lie algebra matrix, which was 2x2 matrix with complex entries. We first find that LU must commute with spin 8 in both of its representations. In representation of one chirality of spinners and the other chirality as well. Then you find, this is a simple exercise, you find that they imply that SO8 reduces to spin 6 plus rotations in the one U plane, right? So basically, by selecting unit imaginary plane, we have selected a copy of the complex plane that is spanned by this imaginary Hectonian and identity. So rotations in it are always possible. Complex structure doesn't break those rotations in the one U plane. And then there is a six dimensional space of what's orthogonal to one in U, and then rotations there are also commuting with this complex structure. And then there is a computation for all diagonal elements. You find that this left of multiplication by x1 and x2 must commute with LU. This implies that x1 and x2 must be linear combinations of 1 and u, because only then they will commute. Okay, so let's write the result in some way. If I can change the page, yeah. So that's here I wrote the resulting matrix. I split it as Lie algebra of spin 6 part. And I use the fact that when we stick to spin 6, A becomes A prime. So I don't need to distinguish them. And then this is my, the remaining part. I have x1, x2, which is in the copy of the complex plane spanned by 1 and u. And I have two real numbers. A was that the real number that was in the original description. It was sitting on the diagonal with an I in front of it. And B is that 1U rotation that, so I mentioned it on the previous slide. I said that from the diagonal, from what remains from spin 8 is spin 6 plus some U1. So B is this U1. So the number of parameters, real parameters here is 6. We expect this to be SO4. This SO4 rotates in the plane 1U X1. X1, X2 are those two extra coordinates that I added to go from spin 8 to spin 10. So this spin 4 rotates in that four dimensional plane. You can also write it even more explicitly by writing that x1 is alpha plus gamma u, x2 is beta plus delta u, and then this SO4 matrix becomes a sum of anti-Hermitian matrix. All the entries here are now real, and the Hermitian matrix with operator of left multiplication by u in front of it. So this is very explicit description of what commutes with the complex structure. You see the expected spin 6, spin 4. But now you also see that the irreducibles of this spin 4 are eigenspaces of LU. Remember, LU is a complex structure on Hectonians. It allows you to split Hectonian as a copy of C4 and the other, the complex conjugate copy. And well, you see from this explicitly that the, for example, eigen space of eigenvalue minus I, this will give you, your SO4 will act irreducibly there, and this eigenspace of eigenvalue minus I, where SO4 also acts irreducibly as two commuting SU2s. So what it means is that we now write the dictionary. The dictionary is that, we have this two-component column with actonians, complexified actonians, which I write explicitly as actonian plus I another actonian. Then my previous description of with spin 6 and spin 4 tells me that if I restrict my actonians to lie in the eigen space of my complex structure LU, then I'll get an SU2L spinner. And if I restrict them to lie in eigenspace, in the other eigenspace of my complex structure, I'll get an SU right spinner. And they are, both of them are fundamentals of SU4. So SU2 will act like this. SU4, because this is a copy of C4 here. This is C4, so SU4 just rotates. Then, okay, so that's the dictionary between elementary particles and components of actonians. And let me see what time. Well, before I conclude, there is another nice variation on this story, which is, well, so let me explain it and say what is known about it. So one can now play the game with these complex structures and change the complex structure slightly. So it's a simple result that the commutant of a very similar complex structure to the one we considered before, but now using right multiplication by U rather than left. In spin 10, this is SU3, U1, SU2 left, SU2 right. Proof is very similar. I won't explain it, but the main idea of the proof is that this x1, x2 commutation with the right multiplication by U, they imply the same. There is no change. So this is why this SU2 L, SU2 right part is unchanged. The change only occurs in the spin 8 part. And then it's a simple exercise to check that your spin 8 commutes with right multiplication by U in both of its spinner representations, only if it's in SU3, U1, and rotations in one U plane. And this is very similar to what happens in spin 9 version of the story. The spin 9 version of the story is explained in this paper, but now this is a generalization to spin 10. And you see that, well, we're getting closer to the group that we want. So basically what is happening is that complex structure RU not just identifies O with C4, but it selects a special copy of C in it. Because this is a copy where left multiplication by U agrees with the right multiplication by U. It's a special copy of C, and this is why SU4 splits further into SU3 plus U1. Anyway, let me summarize. So conclusions, what I explained is a method of constructing spinner representations using polyforms. I find this method convenient, but of course what I talked about doesn't really rely on this method. It's just a method to convince you that there is absolutely no mystery that spin 10 has an actonian description. Many groups do. Basically, as soon as your group sits inside, for example, spin A plus RR, then it will have an actonian description, so there is no mystery. We constructed spin 10 this way, as sitting inside spin 10 too. We saw that this implies that a vile spin of spin 10 is two complexified actonians. And then we can identify elementary particles with components of these complexified actonians, but only after we select a unit imaginary actonian. We need a complex structure to do that. That's very important. So this is to be kept in mind. And maybe it should be kept in mind that there are two complex structures in this game. One complex structure is the one that I used to go from 10 to spin 10. This gave, so my while spinner became C16. There was already some complex structure involved there. And if you want, this complex structure is in the standard model, because it's a complex structure that tells you that your the 16 bar representation of spin 10 is related. It's the complex conjugate of representation of spin of 16 of spin 10. So there is already a complex structure acting on standard model spinners for which spin for which C16 is an eigen space. So that was one complex structure, but that's just a spin 10 complex structure, and we needed to see elementary particles. We needed to introduce another one to see the parties alone. We needed another complex structure. That's very important. So this is probably the main take-home message. But there is this complex structure here. I repeat it again, but let me also summarize the dictionary. The dictionary is that leptons are eigenstates of both LU and RU, because eigenstates of both give you a copy of C in the octonions. Leptons live in that copy of C. The rest of Q, the rest of octonions, octonions describe quarks. And left and right particles are just eigenstates of this complex structure. So that's, these are the main points of the dictionary. And then the interesting result that again can be as a take home message is that it's very easy to describe the group SU2 left, SU2 right times SU3 U1 as sitting inside spin 10. This is the one that commutes with this complex structure. And this observation, now I can mention, it was made by many people. Leighton wrote a paper last year related to this. He saw the same group arising by different construction related to E6. And spin 10 was played part there as well. Same conclusion was reached independently by Ivan Todorov in the private communication. And also Cole and Mia recently sent us all their two preprints or two drafts. One of them contains essentially the same observation. So many people have arrived to this conclusion independently. Okay, and now I will finish with an outlook. Let me see, I still have a few more minutes. So what is very interesting for me in this story is that surprisingly large amount of structure can be seen, or some large amount of structure seen in the standard model comes by choosing a unit imaginary octonion and the associated complex structure. I find this absolutely amazing. What the choice you need to make is just choose this unit imaginary octonion and then bum, 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 bum structure that is so familiar to us arises. We can argue how deep that is, but it's certainly a fact that this is happening. There is also an observation that is made in a recent preprint by Robert Bryant. He put online some old notes of him, of his, about spin 10 in particular. He treats other groups as well, and he also describes octonionic model of spin 10 in that preprint. That model is slightly different to the model I described, but this difference is not very essential. He uses right multiplication as well as left. I was using left multiplication only. But the main point of that I want to mention that there is also observation that a generic wild spinner of spin 10 is in the orbit of this spinner, which is alpha 1 plus I beta u plus 0 I 0. So interestingly, while spinner, generic while spinner of spin 10 selects a unit imaginary octonion by itself. This feels important, but it's not clear how to use it because, of course, it's not clear at all how to use it. But this is a hint that maybe There is something. Anyway, I will mention this fact because this feels important to me. And so there are two more points that I would like to mention. One more point is that further steps can only be taken by bringing in the Lorentz spin. It seems that Lorentz spin cannot be ignored in this description. And one way to do this, and I hope to give a talk about this, is put things together into a bigger pseudo-orthogonal group that contains both spin 10 and Lorentz group. Automatically, the Weyl spinner of this will contain all the right Weyl spinners of these two. And then you can develop this story some distance, and I hope to give a talk about this, but this is a different story. And just last observation is, so we saw that it's very easy to break spin 10 to this left-right symmetric extension of the standard model gauge group. We can actually convert this observation into a model. So what can be done, you just decide that your Higgs field is a complex structure. So it's endomorphism of Weyl spinners. It's a 2x2 matrix, or matrix acting on the spinners. And then you write the kinetic term for it. So you just write the commutator of spin 10 gauge field with this complex structure. You square it, you add a mass term there. And so it's very easy to break by this mechanism, spin 10 down to this left-right symmetric version of the standard model. And you can easily generate very large mass here. So basically that sector kind of automatically disappears in one go. And then of course you would need to break SU2, SU2, U1, but that can be done with the usual Higgs mechanisms. And that would bring another scale here. So there seems to be an interesting unified model here. And with that, I will stop and take questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Kirill. That's great. Great talk. Any question? Oh, I see. Tejinder has a hand up.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for a beautiful talk. So I would like to understand the role of SU2R. So I just try to give you my viewpoint. Suppose I just looked at the group structure G2 of the automorphism group of the octonions. We know that it has two maximal subgroups which intersect, and very similar to what you already told us, one of them is SU3 cross U1. The other is SO4, equivalent to what probably I would think of as SU2 left cross SU2 right. The way I have tried to argue in my work, this SU2 right, when I considered complexified octonions, and SU2 right gets related to the automorphism group SL2C because it's related to complexified quaternions. To
me, this is where I stop understanding. Sorry. This is when I stop understanding. A step like this, when you start talking about complexified octonions and you complexify G2, at this point, I stop understanding. It's.
Okay. So if I claim that.
It's completely clear to me.
So you wouldn't see the Lorentz symmetry SL2C coming from this SU2R, is it?
No. SU2R is a part of Patti Salam.
I would like to give up that picture.
It's representation theory. You cannot give it up. We know that spin 10 works.
Spin 10. I agree. So I wouldn't come to it from spin 10. I would just work.
And it's a different story. Let's not mix it up.
Okay.
Lorentz group didn't play any role in my talk.
Except
that all particles are also Lorentz spinners, but Lorentz group didn't play any role in my talk. It is not part of what I described.
Okay. Thank you.
Were there any other questions? Lee, I think you're muted. Oh no, you're not.
I'm not muted. Kirill, it's very beautiful what you've been exploring and what you just presented. There's another side of the story. I must be pretty sure, in which you are using this to base a unification for geometry and for the dynamics of the gravity and gauge theories and so forth. Mm-hmm. Do you care to comment on that?
Well, for me, that means bringing Lorentz group in, mm-hmm. and I'm doing things with Lorentz group. So this is this 11-3 story. That's the way I'm thinking about it. But as I said, I cannot put it in this talk. It's a different story. But my way of going about it is bringing Lorentz group in explicitly. The best way to do that is 11-3. There is some beauty about this 11-3 and that, but I hope to cover that in another talk. And some geometry appears there. That's the beauty of the story. As soon as you start talking about Lorentz group in 14 dimensions, there is some geometry appearing, which is, I find it very exciting. But again, I cannot explain right now.
Okay, I just wanted to give you the chance in case you were wanting to do that, because it is also a very beautiful story.
Yeah, of course, we know that Lorentz spin needs to be, it's part of the game, so it's very important. But here, my main point was that, see, we all know that, we all believe that actinians are relevant to the description of elementary particles, but of course, this is not a commonly accepted viewpoint. And I just wanted to explain that this absolutely, it's mathematics. Mathematics tells you that this is true. There's absolutely no doubt that you can use actonians to describe elementary particles. It's just a statement about spin then. And so even if we accept this, if the scientific community accepts these statements, I would think that this would be a big step forward. Because right now, this is definitely not a commonly accepted viewpoint.
Why do you think that is?
Well, it's this old problem with quaternions in physics. I think it's mostly sociology. There is some also bad sociology people. There has been some bad papers or some not very scientific papers with actonians and standard model particles. So people. It's now been 15 years, right, that these ideas are on the market, and so maybe people got tired of them, not kind of with no clear result coming from that approach, and so people just don't take it seriously anymore. And I think this is a pity. There is some beautiful mathematics. This actonian description of standard model fermions should be taken seriously because it's probably the best language to describe those spin pen spinners.
Mm-hmm. But of course, Fezzik-Gerson was taken very seriously.
Yes.
So I wonder, is there a result that you could aim for, something about the standard model that could be explained this way, that would encourage people to think more about it?
The only thing that I can see is this statement that you can see left-right extension of the standard model arising just in one way from spin 10. That's the, so you can, what you explain is why it is this particular group that gets selected in spin 10. Of course, part of the explanation is choice of the complex structure, but well, that you think about that as it's your Higgs field that does it. So there is some mechanism, but we know the mathematical description of this mechanism. We don't know why in physics this mechanism is happening, but mathematics tells us that it's very natural to go from spin 10 down to immediately this H book, not to SU5. SU5 is not realized here naturally. It's this gauge book that gets selected.
I see there's an. Go ahead, Paul.
Yeah, sorry. I put my hand up. I'm trying to figure out how to use these things. But I was just wanted to ask about the SO11-3 as a, you know, without having seen your future talk. It looks as though I'm just wondering, are you going to get, you're going to get some kind of correlation between the spin, between the representations of SO13 and the representations of SO10?
Yeah.
Which, I mean, so which have to come out correctly in some way.
They do, and that's very easy.
They do. I presume that was the motivation behind that. And so do you get any stuff that does not come out correctly? I mean, I would start worrying about spin statistics. You know, it's the, because the idea of putting spin, the idea of putting space-time symmetries and internal symmetries together, right? That's in non-relativistic.
You can always take a very
idea,
you can always take a cautious viewpoint. Think about my construction of spin 10. I do spin 10, put it in spin 10 2, and then immediately broke it down by choosing a complex structure.
Yeah.
I can always do the same with 11.3. I can take 11.3, take a real vial spin of 11.3, immediately choose a complex structure which will break me down to spin 10 and Lorentz.
If I
do this, I just have spin 10, Lorentz, correct particles. And then I can tell myself, never think about 11.3.
If it works, of course, some people will say, that's what people used to say about going to higher dimensions. It's very convenient in supersymmetry, but then somebody asks eventually, well, but we should take it seriously. So obviously if it works, I mean, if there's something behind it.
Honest answer is that I don't know yet. There are many things that spin 11.3 does for you automatically. But I'm not yet.
Yeah. Well, anyway,
don't make any claims. Let me give a talk about that.
Yeah, but let me just say one other thing, because I mean, one of the reasons I think that one of the reasons that things haven't sort of taken off on Octonians, etc., is that just the idea of non-associative numbers and so on. I mean, it's just doing calculations.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the question is how easy is it to actually do things. So I was very much encouraged by your talk, because it looked as though I've always been afraid of trying to do anything with Octonians. So
I'm saying that if you want to be large, you need to use Octonians. That's the message.
Yeah.
That's the best way.
Yes.
This I discovered myself in the last year, but this is known to mathematicians. So I didn't invent it at all. The way people in the right community treat these large orthogonal groups. Go ahead.
I didn't know if you were done or not. You can finish your sentence if you were. I was just going to object a point that the big deal. So Octonions are non-associative, and people seem to make a really big deal about this. But you know, the truth is, Lie algebras are also non-associative, and so are Jordan algebras. So I never really feel like the argument against Octonions because of their non-associativity is very strong.
Well, yeah, we say that that's the argument against them. We saw that in this particular way I'm using them, I immediately convert them into associative operators.
Mm-hmm.
Then
exactly. So if you take any chain of multiplying octonions onto octonions, it doesn't matter how complicated bracketing gets, you can always revert it into a form where it's given by pure left multiplication.
Left multiplication of an octonion by an octonion is an 8x8 matrix. You have an explicit description, because matrices are associated. So that just solves the problem, and you never need to worry about it.
Right.
But of course, it's interesting that octonions are non-associative. So for example, the reason this right multiplication does different things to left multiplication is because of non-associativity.
Mm-hmm.
You could do the same story of quaternions, and the story would be very different. So octonions, they do things different to quaternions, and this is related to the non-associativity. They're very interesting. There is beautiful geometry in them. This geometry is getting used.
Yeah, sure. They do something different at every step. So with the complex numbers, you can element-wise identify left multiplication or right multiplication. In the case of quaternions, the maps are generically completely independent. And in the case of the octonions, they're not element-wise equal, but the space of linear maps is the same whether you're multiplying from the left and right. So there's three different cases. They're each different from each other.
I agree, yes.
Tejinder, did you have one last question?
Yes. This issue of why octonions have not been received better. So my principal problem has been the way the subject is growing. How do you relate it to, say, quantum field theory in four dimensions? How do you do QFT with this? Like, can I work out gauge couplings? How do they evolve? For instance,
octonions, they play two roles. They are spinners. So they give efficient description of spinners, and they also give efficient description of Lie algebra of spin 10. So you just write your Lie algebra is 2x2. The gauge fields take values in these 2x2 complex matrices with octonionic entries. You just work with that.
I think we have a different philosophy. I'm much more comfortable thinking of octonions as an eight-dimensional octonionic space in which then I must do quantum theory of these elementary particles which live in this 8D space.
Well, is the question... So there are two things. There is mathematics and there is physics. But mathematics, there can be no doubt. If there is a correct mathematical statement, we would all agree about it.
I agree with
statement
you.
Is that one can describe spin time using octonions.
Agree.
Therefore, if you want to write a model using spin time, you can do it using octonions. That's it. And as for physics, well, physics is a different thing. We can write many different models, many different actions.
All right. Well, that was a lot of good questions. I'm sensitive to the fact that our colleagues further east, it's getting late for them. So maybe at that point, we should thank Kirill one last time for a great talk and end until next week.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Cheers. Thanks for that.
If anyone wanted to stay on and discuss, I could transfer the host. I have to run myself, actually, but if anyone wanted to stay on, I could transfer hosting.
I'm off.
Oh, okay. Okay, in that case, see you later, everybody.
See ya.